Okay, welcome to Free Association. I've got three clips to play because it's a big day in the UK. The Deputy Prime Minister has just resigned this morning. So there was an investigation into some accusations of bullying, and he's just received the report. Rishi Sunak, the Prime Minister, received the report. Said he was going to sleep on what to do about the findings. And in the meantime, Dominic Raab has decided he needs to resign because he's got absolutely no choice in the matter, because he was going to get sacked if he didn't, because there's nothing else he can do. He said that he would resign if they found any instances of bullying behaviour, and they found two instances of bullying behaviour. So he doesn't have a choice. But anyway, I've got some clips lined up. The first one is James O'Brien on LBC, who absolutely annihilates it, the whole situation. And then there's a couple of 10-minute clips from Sky News that are fairly functional and describe what's happened. So I thought I'd put James O'Brien first, just because it's very, very amusing. I find him to be spectacularly good at this sort of thing. And it's worth sharing. So here's James O'Brien to start us off.
What do you make of this? What does it say to you? How much longer can this lot get away with this catalogue, this absolute avalanche of appalling behaviour? This is actually a good day for British democracy, because despite his best efforts to wriggle off the hook, he hasn't. When Priti Patel was found to have breached the ministerial code with regard to bullying, remember, Boris Johnson left her in post and accepted the resignation of the independent advisor who had found her guilty of bullying. It's very easy to gloss over those moments on our national decline, because obviously so much of the media was encouraging you to look the other way or pretending that it was in any way acceptable conduct. Such was the cult of Boris Johnson, and do make sure you've got your teeth in before deploying that phrase in the wild today. These were moments of national catastrophe, whatever your politics are. I appreciate, and I don't think I'm going to bend over backwards to be polite today. If you are too stupid or too biased to realise that even if it's your lot doing it, the damage to democracy affects us all, then you're probably still listening to the wrong programme. But when Dominic Cummings lied brazenly and blatantly about driving to Barnard Castle on his wife's birthday to visit a local beauty spot, or in direct breach of coronavirus regulations, and then claimed that it was to test his eyesight before going on an even longer drive, they were all laughing at you. Especially if you have got lots of flags in your Twitter profile and Forever Boris as your hashtag, that you are the people they laugh at loudest. You are the people who they wait for you to leave the room and then collapse in fits of giggles, like Queen Elizabeth Melchior and Nursey in an episode of Blackadder 2. You are the people they hate the most, and you are the people they laugh at, still waving your pathetic little Brexit flags and claiming that Boris Johnson got it done. They despise you. And the extent of that hatred is on display when people like Priti Patel keep their jobs despite being bullies, when people like Suella Braverman get their jobs back despite breaking the ministerial code. And that's why it's taken so long for Raab to go. Make no mistake, this would have been an exercise in wriggling, a desperate exercise with or without Sunak's connivance, although given what he did with Suella Braverman, it seems to me perfectly plausible he'd have been part of an Operation Save Raab. That's what they've done. That's why it's taken so long. You remember Operation Save Owen Paterson, after he was found to have breached the parliamentary code. They assembled whatever the opposite of the Avengers would be in a desperate attempt to save his career. Jacob Rees-Mogg inevitably in the driving seat. Boris Johnson inevitably pulling the strings. People like Charles Moore at the Daily Telegraph inevitably writing articles about how unfairly Owen Paterson had been treated. Because I'll tell you one inalienable truth about the last few years of British politics. Everybody who accuses the other lot of being sore losers, or of being snowflakes, or of being thin-skinned, or of being hypersensitive, are the biggest whining, mewling, puking infants you could ever encounter in a million years in public life. Oh, it wasn't me. Oh, it's not fair. Oh, I didn't mean it. Oh, can he have his job back? Oh, I was testing my eyesight. Oh, let's form a circle around the Pritzker. Oh, Nadine Dorries. Oh, they are absolutely tragic. And whatever your politics, if you've got three brain cells, there will come a day, sooner rather than later, when you realise what's been done to you by the people you thought were on your side. So today is a good day, because the wriggle has failed. An administration that's already demonstrated a degree of contempt for the ministerial code has found itself in a position where it cannot ignore the ministerial code. A man who pledged to resign if he was found to have been a bully has resigned because he's been found to have been a bully. But here we still are. At the end of this, I suspect I will. And he'll probably be back. You know, it's not like you and me getting a kicking or getting our sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap. He did. Another thing I find odd at times like this is how they segue effortlessly to the back benches. How would you feel about that? Your boss has been demoted for bullying you and now he sits next to you in the office. Now he works next to you in the factory. Doesn't quite ring true, does it? Sling him out. Stick him on the slag heap. Hand him his sandwiches wrapped in a roadmap. I will probably at the end of this contemplation ask you what you make of it all, but I'm going to begin by going through the letter with a degree, I hope, of depth. Dear Prime Minister, that's fairly uncontroversial. I am writing to resign from your government following receipt of the report arising from the inquiry conducted by Adam Tolley, KC, full stop, off letter now. I am writing to resign from your government some 24 hours after receiving the report from Adam Tolley, KC, during which time I have wriggled violently in a desperate attempt to get off the hook of the consequences of my own conduct in exactly the same way that so many of my colleagues have done since Brexit. From Priti Patel to Dominic Cummings to Suella Braverman to Owen Paterson, I have engaged in a long and fruitful post-Brexit conservative tradition of desperately trying to evade any responsibility whatsoever for my proven actions, for the consequences of my proven actions. We continue. I called for the inquiry and undertook to resign if it made any finding of bullying whatsoever. Off the letter again. This at the time was the only way in which I could conceivably cling on to my job after civil servants queued up in numbers to accuse me of all manner of abuses, including some which had reportedly left colleagues suicidal. I, however, Dominic Raab, am the real victim here. I didn't expect to resign, because I served in a government that allowed Priti Patel to keep her job after she'd been found guilty of bullying. I served in a government that allowed Dominic Cummings to keep his job after he was found guilty of breaking lockdown laws that he'd helped to implement on a blatant and brazen scale. I served in the government that became the address at which more criminal breaches of lockdown laws were committed than any other address in the country. And I saw Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak receive fines for that behaviour and behave as if nothing untoward had happened at all. I didn't think I'd have to resign because I am Deputy Prime Minister in a government that gets its testicles tickled by right-wing newspapers every morning instead of being held to account for the most obvious and egregious breaches of the most basic and simple traditions and supporters of British democracy. I didn't expect to resign. I expected front pages on the Daily Mail describing how it was a damp squib, or how it was a witch hunt, or how they were unfairly going after Big Bad Dom. I didn't expect to resign when I pledged to resign, but hey-ho, here I am, next sentence. I believe it is important to keep my word. I believe it is important to keep my word. Wait, was he Deputy Prime Minister to Boris Johnson? He was, wasn't he? I, a man who served as Deputy Prime Minister to Boris Johnson, believe it is important to keep my word. Phew, good God, we've fallen so far. Paragraph 2. It has been a privilege to serve you as Deputy Prime Minister, Justice Secretary and Lord Chancellor. Positions which I shamefully clung on to while this inquiry was being conducted. Anybody in the Labour Party at the moment, led by that man that you childishly describe as Sir Softy, gets suspended at the first suggestion of the kind of conduct I've now been found guilty of, but you saw fit to leave me in post 4 months while this investigation was being conducted and while the victims of my appalling abuses and bullying were left wondering whether they were going to receive any justice whatsoever. But I am also the Justice Secretary responsible for the biggest backlog in history in our courts, while claiming publicly that I'm somehow making progress in that field. I believe it is important to keep my word, says a man who lied about the judicial system, court backlogs, and, of course, lawyers in general. Back to the letter. I'm grateful to have had the opportunity to work as a minister in a range of roles and departments since 2015 and pay tribute to the many outstanding civil servants with whom I have worked. I appreciate that without Brexit breaking pretty much every requirement of competence or decency on the part of Conservative politicians, I would never have got off the bench. But thanks to Brexit, I managed to be promoted far beyond my capabilities and somehow ended up not just in the cabinet, but also foreign secretary when I accidentally stayed on the beach while Kabul fell and then lied about the sea being closed, and deputy prime minister. Whilst I feel duty-bound to accept the outcome of the inquiry, it dismissed all but two of the claims levelled against me. Please don't look at the accusations and allegations that have been found to be true. Concentrate instead on the ones that have not been found to be true, whether due to lack of evidence or some other technicality. I would rather not focus on the fact that I'm guilty, but focus instead on the things that I haven't been found guilty of. This despite the fact that I'm a trained lawyer. Never in my legal career have I stood up in court and responded to a verdict by pointing out the charges that have not been found guilty and urging the judge to concentrate instead on the charges. Well, you can fill in the gaps there. I also believe that its two adverse findings are flawed and set a dangerous precedent for the conduct of good government. I have not got a Scooby-Doo what the conduct of good government looks like because I've been part of the two... Well, actually, I don't think he had a role in Truss's government, did he? But I've certainly been part of two of the three worst governments in the history of the United Kingdom. Indeed, I was Deputy Prime Minister in both of them. But I'm going to bleat meaninglessly today about the importance of the conduct of good government without mentioning that I was party to some of the most obvious and egregious breaches of both the Ministerial Code and the Parliamentary Code of Ethics without ever saying a single word in protest. It's 10:15. First, ministers must be able to exercise direct oversight with respect to senior officials over critical negotiations conducted on behalf of the British people. Otherwise, the democratic and constitutional principle of ministerial responsibility will be lost. There's a man who resigned as a minister shortly after revealing that he accepted the job as Brexit secretary without actually appreciating the importance of the crossing between Dover and Calais to the import and export of goods into and out of the United Kingdom. That's a level of stupidity that is beyond parody. That is Nadine Dorries level stupidity. But the man is arguably too dim to realise the awfulness of his own admission. This was particularly true during my time as Foreign Secretary in the context of the Brexit negotiations over Gibraltar, when a senior diplomat breached the mandate agreed by Cabinet. Pour me a drink, says Dominic Raab. Not mentioning, of course, his greatest hits as Foreign Secretary, up to and including the time that he declined to come back from his holiday while Kabul fell, and Afghan translators and other professionals who had actually helped the British keep the Taliban at bay were effectively abandoned.
This is the document at the heart of it. It dropped about an hour ago, and it is these almost 60-page report into Dominic Raab's behaviour. It's taken 5 months to get this far. Two complaints upheld, the rest dismissed. There's a lot that Dominic Raab will have found very painful to read. There's a lot that suggests that he doesn't accept the accusations of bullying. It's quite explicit that although there are findings that he behaved improperly, he doesn't believe he did so even now. That's clear from the document, from the letters that have been exchanged and from the Telegraph article that has just come out. But ultimately, the bottom line is that Dominic Raab is now out as Deputy Prime Minister and as Justice Secretary because of the conclusions of this report. Now, I'm going to whiz you through as quickly as possible some of the key bits that we've managed to find in the last half an hour or so. So we'll just flash through various bits. And this document really talks about, goes through inordinate detail. Adam Tolley talked to Raab, in which Dominic Raab admitted that he was, in his own words, inquisitorial, direct, impatient and fastidious. So Dominic Raab is admitting some bits of behaviour that he thinks are absolutely fine. Clearly, what he wants to do is make the case that different interpretations of behaviour are what's going on here. But as you get into the report, you can see here that views differed. It was the precise nature of the way that Dominic Raab liked to conduct his work. They like to conduct business with his officials that caused, in the words of Adam Tolley, some distress, perhaps even harm to the health of the people that worked around him. Dominic Raab said it was my exacting standards. Adam Tolley doesn't come down on his side in a number of respects. But this paragraph here gives you a sense of the kinds of things that we're dealing with. So he thinks, Dominic Raab thinks, that things are frustrating as he's working inside the Ministry of Justice. But here are the sorts of demands that he's making. He prefers to receive papers in a set format so that he can quickly assimilate the information in question. If this work is not provided to his satisfaction, he will, in general, say so. If, in the course of meeting, an attendee does not, in the PM, Deputy Prime Minister's view, answer a question in the manner which he regards as direct and straightforward, the Deputy Prime Minister will likely interrupt. One of the key questions in relation to some of the complaints is whether or not the Deputy Prime Minister's style of conduct in a meeting, and in particular when frustrated, goes beyond what would normally be regarded as acceptable. And that's where we end up with a division. Dominic Raab says it was acceptable. Adam Tolley says it wasn't acceptable. Ultimately, he's left his job. But this is a conversation, Sam, that's not going to finish today. It's got a long way to go as different people have different views of what happens in the workplace and different approaches to it. He says part of that, as we go through this report, you come across extraordinary paragraphs. Take this one. It's about the use of physical gestures. I heard a good deal of evidence about the Deputy Prime Minister's use of physical gestures in communication. The most extreme, and which would have been unacceptable, this was put as extending his hand directly out towards another person's face with a view to making them stop talking. Another example of such is an allegation of loud banging of a table to make a point. At the opposite end of the spectrum, which would be regarded as acceptable, he used defensive gestures to suggest that a person should hold off from speaking further. So this is an unacceptable example of Dominic Raab's behaviour, in Adam Tolley's view, is extending his hand directly out towards another person's face with a view to making them stop talking. So everybody at home will have a view whether they think that is acceptable or unacceptable. Adam Tolley says, in the workplace, that is unacceptable. Dominic Raab, it would appear, disagrees. But let's look at some of the things that happened when Dominic Raab was Foreign Secretary that are talked about later in the report. And there was an incident when he was in the Foreign Office, and he had formed an adverse view in the way about the way that his officials were conducting their work about a particular project. He doesn't say what the project is, but there was something the Deputy Prime Minister, the Foreign Secretary, was unhappy with. As part of the process towards and the implementation of a management choice, he acted in a way which was intimidating in the sense of unreasonably and persistently aggressive. It goes on in the context of a workplace meeting. His conduct also involved an abuse or a misuse of power in the way to humiliate and undermine. In particular, he went beyond what was reasonably necessary in order to give effect to his decision and introduced a punitive element. His conduct was bound to be experienced as undermining or humiliating by the affected individual, and so it was experienced. So that's the sort of nub of the kind of allegation that you get in parts of this report. Basically, he was humiliating staff, undermining their confidence. He would say he was pursuing exacting standards and he was trying to uphold an efficient workplace to get stuff done. But Adam Tolley say it did undermine and humiliate civil servants who were working with him. And says he should have been aware of this. Dominic Raab disagrees that this was bullying, but he should have done, according to that report. If we go on, you can see that in one case, it had a significant adverse effect on a particular individual in one complaint who took it seriously. The Deputy Prime Minister's conduct was a form of intimidating behaviour in the sense of conveying a threat of unspecified discipline. So the allegation there is, if you don't do the stuff in the way that I like it, you'll face some kind of disciplinary sanction. Basically, what you've got there is Adam Tolley saying that he should have realised that the threat came through basically, it seemed, Dominic Raab going, yeah, you do know you'll be in breach of the civil service code if you continue to act like that. Basically, Adam Tolley saying that kind of way of acting was unacceptable. Let's look at the next bit. Sometimes the Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, would take a strong view that officials should have been prepared in advance to answer his questions at a meeting, and in the event that he cannot do so, offers largely unconstructive criticism about the manner. So you don't come to my meetings and you're going to get something of a roasting. Dominic Raab would say necessary in order to ensure that civil servants do come prepared to a meeting. It's quite perfectly fair to get cross if the people who work for you aren't ready with the answers to the questions you think. And one of the things that the Deputy Prime Minister used to do, it would seem, in the absence, would be to complain about the absence of what he would call basic information. We go on about the basics. You haven't got me the basics. The public airing of a comment of this kind, where others are present, are not or may not be well-placed to judge whether the criticism is well-founded, likely to be experienced as an unfairly personal criticism by the individual to whom the comment is directed and was so experienced by some individuals. This is, again, where this whole issue goes back away from a subject of law and actually comes back in terms of politics. Is somebody, is the boss of an organisation standing there or sitting there going, look, you just haven't done your homework, you haven't done the basics, you haven't got the information that I want. Is that bullying? Is that harassment? Is that not? You know, this is something that ultimately has resulted in Dominic Raab losing his job, but everybody at home will have their own view about what they think constitutes bullying, what's acceptable in the workplace, and what was going on. Here we go. This is from the conclusions. Adam Tolley says, I overall conclude that Dominic Raab's conduct during the period that he was Secretary of State for Justice was on some occasions abrasive. I think that's acceptable or unacceptable. Everyone will have a view on that. In sense of his personal style, which is intimidating or insulting to individuals, but not intended to do so. His conduct, however, was not abusive in the sense of behaviour which was intended and specifically targeted. So there is some limit to the judgment, adverse judgment that Adam Tolley is willing to make, as he isn't abusive. He has been able to regulate this level of abrasiveness since the announcement of the investigation. So he's improved his behaviour in the last 5 months. But Dominic Raab should have altered his approach earlier, particularly after two of the most senior civil servants in Whitehall took him aside and said, look, you've got to treat people better. Does he regret what he did? Well, here it says he has not offered any apology, given that he does not accept anything was wrong. And so I think there you get the difference between his view and the lawyers. And you can see how really this breaks down. And it's going to end up being something of a talking point for some time to come. And then towards the end of the conclusions, you've got more sense that Dominic Raab acted in a manner which was intimidating, going further than necessary in order to deliver critical feedback, making unconstructive critical comments about the quality of work done and wanted stuff about the basics. So there you get that overall sense of what we're talking about.
Alex Chalk's going to be the new Justice Secretary. He is the MP for Cheltenham. He's on the sort of Liberal wing of the party. He is currently a Defence Minister. He's a close ally of the Prime Minister. And so this is a sort of appointment, if you like, for Rishi Sunak, where he's really shoring up, losing a close lieutenant, an ally, and replacing him with someone who is in his circle and whom he trusts. So Alex Chalk coming in. I mean, Alex Chalk is kind of in that gang of people such as Mel Stride, the Work and Pension Secretary of State, and also John Glenn, who works at the Treasury, Grant Shapps. There's a number of them who have been kind of key figures for Rishi Sunak in recent weeks. So he's given a promotion, putting into cabinet someone that, as he loses someone he really trusts, putting in someone that really is one of his people.